it's just going to be the natural outcome of having two bodies that are philosophically different, and we haven't had that for a long time.
The legislature is on track to pass the least number of bills in its history. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, April 9th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, opponents of the so-called bathroom bill in Anchorage reflect on their election victory.
We were able to pull together a really strong trans-centered, you know, education campaign.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com.
Alaska's legislature could finish the legislative session within a few days of its scheduled 90-day length, but it's not clear which bills lawmakers will pass in the remaining days other than those related to the budget. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on what legislative leaders say about some of the largest remaining issues.
Senate President Pete Kelly says Senate leaders are optimistic about ending the session shortly after Sunday, the last day under the schedule set by state law. Kelly, a Fairbanks Republican, says there's been less disagreement between the two chambers this year.
Last year, it was a full-on war between the House and the Senate.
By comparison, Kelly describes, quote, high-level cooperation this year on the budget. Still, only six bills have passed both chambers. That number is much lower than the current record for the fewest bills passed in the state's history, 32, set last year. The Senate passed the sixth bill Monday, a measure that would repeal the Administrative Regulation Review Committee. The committee hasn't done anything in 15 years. Kelly says the slow pace is the result of differences between the Senate and House.
It's just going to be the natural outcome of having two bodies that are philosophically different, and we haven't had that for a long time.
Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon says there will be opportunities to pass several more bills before the session ends.
There are many things that we agree on, and you'll see those coming to fruition in the last 7 days.
They include minor bills to extend boards and commissions into the future. A leader in the House agreed that much could happen quickly. Homer Majority Caucus Republican Paul Seaton is the co-chairman of the House Finance Committee.
Well, it's often late in the session when you pass the bills, especially on the second session. So there's been a number of bills. We have a number here that are Senate bills that are teed up, ready to go as well. And there's House bills that are good ideas. We have a number of bills that are reducing costs to the state.
Bethel Senator Lyman Hoffman, a Democrat, says that along with budget legislation, the most important remaining bill for the legislature to consider is Senate Bill 26. It would close most of the long-term gap between state spending and revenue.
How are we going to have the permanent fund be involved in addressing our fiscal crisis? That, I think, is probably the most important question.
The Senate majority has stopped short of saying they wouldn't end the session without a bill like Senate Bill 26, which would draw a percentage of the Alaska Permanent Fund's market value to pay for state government. But Hoffman, the longest-serving lawmaker, acknowledged that the two sides continue to differ.
I wouldn't be a happy camper. Having been here for many years, you have to live with what can get accomplished.
The House has refused to pass a permanent fund plan without additional taxes that would fully close the budget gap. The House majority has argued that passing a plan with taxes would be more responsible and more fair to lower and middle income residents who are losing a significant share of their income through cuts to permanent fund dividends. The House Finance Committee is discussing House Bill 411, which would raise taxes on oil and gas companies. Senators say it's too late in the session to fully debate the bill. Seaton says the House has been consistent in saying more revenue is essential, and he says the oil tax bill is identical to provisions in a bill the House passed last year.
They've had this, and if they haven't analyzed it, it means they weren't interested in getting SB 26 done.
One high-profile bill that could pass is Senate Bill 63, which would prohibit smoking in workplaces, including bars, and in outdoor spaces near workplaces. The House Rules Committee is scheduled to hold a hearing on the bill Tuesday. Committee Chairwoman Gabrielle Ledoux, an Anchorage Republican, had declined to hold a hearing so far this session. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Three pieces of legislation were scheduled to receive a hearing Saturday in the Senate Judiciary Committee, but only one received brief consideration, after which Committee Chairman Senator John Coghill abruptly ended the hearing early. The meeting was scheduled to consider a resolution to put Alaska Permanent Fund dividends in the state constitution. Another bill sought to repeal the 2016 law that made changes to Alaska's criminal justice system, and a third would have renamed crime legislation after murder victim Bree Moore. But this is what happened when Anchorage Democratic Senator Bill Willikowski made a motion to pass the resolution to amend the Constitution to mandate a full PFD under a legal formula used until 2 years ago.
I would move that we move Senate Joint Resolution 1 out of committee with individual recommendations.
And I'll object to that, and I'll adjourn.
Because Coghill brought down the gavel to adjourn the meeting, the other two bills on the agenda weren't heard. Those bills would have repealed the criminal justice law known as Senate Bill 91 and rename a portion of the Alaska Safe Children's Act as Bree's Law. The meeting was unusual in the first place. It occurred only after three senators banded together to force Coghill to hold the hearing. Willikowski, Anchorage Republican Mia Costello, and Wasilla Republican Mike Schauer used a rarely invoked rule that allows bills to have committee hearings even if the committee chair doesn't want to hold them. Coghill says the use of the rule was fair.
And I have been reluctant to hear this, and so you guys twisted my arm. I think it's appropriate. I think you used the rules to get it.
But Coghill wasn't willing to have the committee advance the PFD amendment. Costello says she wishes the Senate Bill 91 repeal she sponsored had been heard. SB 91 changed the state's criminal sentencing, bail, and probation laws and has been the subject of a lot of public criticism.
I think it's a vital conversation that we have to have with the legislature and the public, because in my community, people are not able to walk out their front doors even with a feeling of safety.
Senate leaders say the bills will receive hearings in the Senate Finance Committee. It's not yet clear when those hearings will be. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is starting public scoping meetings this week for the Pebble Mine, a proposed copper-gold mine in southwest Alaska that has generated significant controversy. The first meeting is being held from 3:30 to 7:30 today at the Bristol Bay Borough School in Naknek. The scoping period is the public's chance to weigh in on which issues the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers should investigate as it prepares an environmental impact statement for the Pebble project. That EIS will play a key role as federal agencies decide whether or not to approve the project's permit application. Comments will be taken in writing or on computers set up at the school. Court reporters and translators will also be available to take oral comments. The Army Corps will hold scoping meetings in Kakanak, Homer, New Halen, and New Stuyahok this week. A drunk driver ran over and killed a woman in Valdez on Sunday morning outside of a local bar. The Valdez Police Department arrested Errol Wally for striking and killing Chelsea Hoffman, a 31-year-old mother of four, with his pickup before fleeing the scene. KBBI's Renee Gross has more.
According to a press release from the Valdez Police Department, officers responded to a hit-and-run call involving a pedestrian outside of the boardroom bar at 2:30 a.m. Sunday. According to the Anchorage Daily News, a friend told Wally he was too drunk to drive, but he got into his Dodge Ram anyways. He struck Hoffman as she stood on the sidewalk near the front of the bar. Wally stopped and then drove over Hoffman. Valdez police say the Valdez Fire Department responded to the scene and transported her to Providence Valdez Hospital. Hoffman was pronounced dead roughly an hour after the incident. Valdez police say they were able to track Wally's vehicle to a residence on Flacken Avenue, where he was arrested and taken to the Valdez jail. nearly 3 hours after he struck Hoffman. Wally's blood alcohol level was at 0.305%, more than three times the legal limit. According to the ADN, Wally initially denied that he had been drinking or had gone to the bar for drinks. Wally was charged with two felony counts Monday for manslaughter and leaving the scene of an accident. He also was charged for driving and possessing a weapon while intoxicated, both misdemeanors. According to Wally's Facebook page, he currently lives in Valdez, but is originally from the Homer area. He was the director of marine operations at Crowley Maritime Corporation, which currently provides tug serve for Alyeska Pipeline Service Company. Crowley said in an emailed statement that its sincerest condolences go out to Hoffman's family and to everyone who is affected by her death. The company says Wally has been terminated from his position. The Valdez company is mourning the death of Hoffman, and there has been an outflow of support for her family. A Valdez coffee shop, Klondike Coffee, is donating its sales Monday to the family, and the community is providing meals to Hoffman's family. Some on social media are also calling for the Boardroom Bar's liquor license to be revoked. Reporting in Homer, I'm Renee Gross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Southeast Native Corporation looks to profit from trees, but not through harvesting them.
Multiple millions. That the financial benefit of this is very significant for Sea Alaska.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com.
Voters in Anchorage rejected a controversial proposal last week that would have banned transgender people from using bathrooms that correspond to their gender identity. The bathroom bill, as it was called, mirrored legislation passed in Houston and North Carolina. As Alaska Public Media's Zechariah Hughes reports, the result was a surprise to many and have implications for the November elections in other states.
For Lillian Lennon, watching the votes being tallied in last week's municipal election was tense.
I, of course, was a little nervous because it was kind of like the final countdown.
Lennon, a transgender woman, is a field organizer for Fair Anchorage, a group that spent more than a year organizing against what became known as Proposition 1, the bathroom bill. To the surprise of many in Anchorage, including some of the campaign's organizers, the measure failed to pass by just a little over 4,000 votes. Lennon attributes the results to a coalition that included civil rights groups, the business community, and moderate Republicans.
We were able to pull together a really strong trans-centered, education campaign, really show the lives of trans people and their families.
Others point to high turnout in the city's first ever election done by mail-in ballots and a popular progressive mayor running for re-election. But not everyone agrees with that analysis.
I would say the number one reason would be $1 million buys a lot of confusion.
Jim Minnery is president of Alaska Family Action, a Christian policy advocacy group. He chaired the campaign in favor of the bathroom bill, but his group was outspent by a margin of 6-1. The Prop 1 campaign attracted more money than any other item on the Anchorage ballot by far, including the mayor's race. Donations from national progressive groups poured in, including the American Civil Liberties Union, Freedom for All Americans, and Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest and Hawaii. Bolstered by strong individual donations too, Fair Anchorage raised more than $800,000. Minnery's campaign raised about $128,000. He says his organization will now focus on electing a more conservative governor and legislators in November who can override local policies in Anchorage.
We're feeling pretty positive about it and just looking forward to another opportunity to bring some common sense back to this issue.
The results are a major shift from just 6 years ago. In 2012 municipal elections, voters rejected a broad equal rights ordinance on the ballot. Those anti-discrimination measures were eventually passed by the city's assembly in 2015. The Prop 1 effort is a narrow attempt to repeal some of those expanded protections and is similar to bills introduced in other state legislatures, as well as two ballot measures that could go before voters in Montana and Massachusetts this November. Anchorage's campaign to defeat Proposition 1 may provide a playbook for similar state-level battles. Casey Reynolds is a spokesperson for the Alaska chapter of the ACLU, one of the main opponents of the local measure.
I would expect the understanding of what happened here to reverberate through the community very quickly, because it really was both a local and national effort here in Anchorage.
Nearly 78,000 ballots were cast in this year's election, almost 36% of eligible voters. Results are expected to be certified on April 17th. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Early on Saturday morning, a man broke into an antique store in South Anchorage and walked away with tens of thousands of dollars worth of ivory and other Alaska Native artifacts. Late Saturday evening, the suspect was arrested. Employees of Duane's Auction Market arrived at work at 9 a.m. Saturday and found the front glass window smashed. Security footage from the store shows a man in a black trench coat broke in around 5:30 a.m. He grabbed ivory artifacts, including a large ivory tusk, wrapped them in a rug, and made off in a late 1990s sedan. Anchorage police sent photos of the man and his car out to the public. Then Saturday evening, Airport police responded to a welfare check. An older man was asking for gas money. When airport police arrived, they found 60-year-old Timothy Hayes in his 1999 green Ford Contour. In the back seat of the Contour was the rolled-up rug with a large ivory tusk sticking out. Hayes was arrested by the Anchorage police on charges of burglary, theft, and criminal mischief. The Alaska Native artifacts were seized by the police as evidence. 1 million Alaska Airline miles have been reported stolen from the Bethel Family Clinic. Clinic board members reported the theft to the Bethel Police Department a week ago on March 30th. According to Police Chief Burke Waldron, the miles accrued on the clinic's corporate credit card account were being forwarded to a private personal mileage account instead. Waldron would not comment on whether the Bethel police had any suspects in the case, adding that their investigation is in its early stages. The Me Too movement is being mischaracterized in popular culture. That was a primary message of Me Too founder Tarana Burke, who spoke at the University of Alaska Fairbanks on Friday. Burke says the power of Me Too lies with individuals, not the media.
It's your movement. It's our movement. It is a survivor's movement. You are in it if you say you're in it. You know, if you need to see MSNBC declare that so-and-so is part of the Me Too movement, it won't happen.
Burke first began using the words Me Too as a means of connecting with young women she counseled in Alabama, but dispels the common belief that Me Too is solely a women's movement, emphasizing that people of both genders can be victims of sexual violence. Burke is also critical of media over focus on powerful men identified as perpetrators, which she says misses the point of why so many victims of sexual violence are coming forward.
These people who are standing up are asking for healing. They're asking for resources. The other stuff, the punitive stuff, is very, not even secondary. And so this is not a movement about taking down powerful men.
Burke says she hopes people who hear her speak leave thinking about their role in driving the movement forward.
We can do this work. We don't have to wait for somebody else to validate us. So if y'all are willing to do this work, the only thing I can leave you with are these two words. Me too.
Tarana Burke was brought to UAF by the Nanook Diversity and Action Center.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how.
Big greenhouse gas emitters in California are now able to buy carbon offset credits based in Alaska. Southeast's Regional Native Corporation is using some of its lands for carbon sequestration. Thousands of acres of old-growth trees will stay intact for more than 100 years. It's the first carbon bank in the state to be approved for the market. Sea Alaska Corporation says it's another way of securing a future for shareholders. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story.
Going up. On the fourth floor of Sea Alaska Plaza, there's a boardroom with an amazing view. A long glass window overlooks the Gastineau Channel. Beyond that, you can see a sea of evergreens. Anthony Malott gestures to the landscape.
We think we live in a very protected, amazing, sacred place on this earth, but there's room for economic activity.
Malott is Sea Alaska Corporation's president and CEO. At 42 years old, he's one of the younger leaders. This morning, he went skiing. But he jokes he doesn't feel that youthful with a bad knee. He started working at Sea Alaska more than a decade ago.
I was started in a time period where we could see effectively the end of our timber harvest without getting additional new lands.
The corporation manages around 360,000 acres in Southeast Alaska. And Malott says developing the natural resources, like timber, was an important part of creating the first dividends for shareholders. But he says the original land allocation only represents a small part of the region.
It wasn't the be-all and end-all.
The corporation is expected to make money for its shareholders, but it's already cut close to a third of its trees. And not all of the sites left are ideal for logging. There are old growth stands next to salmon streams. So Malott says the corporation was faced with a challenge. How do you protect those sensitive areas and still make money for shareholders?
It was really the need to stretch our harvest and diminish our harvest from a higher level that put us in this framework of thinking, okay, what really is sustainability for Sea Alaska?
Enter the California Cap and Trade Program. Basically, big polluters in the Golden State receive an allowance to release a planned amount of carbon each year. To account for each metric ton of carbon, companies can use that allowance or buy carbon offset credits. And those credits represent an actual, tangible thing.
So we have trees.
Malott says carbon sequestration looked like the right opportunity. The money generated would help shareholders, and nearly half of the trees on Sea Alaska land could stay in the ground. He's quick to point out this land isn't locked up. The corporation can still develop the parcels for tourism or mineral exploration. And he says the project has already attracted a buyer. It's too early to tell an exact number, but he thinks the figures could be huge.
Multiple millions. The financial benefit of this is very significant for Sea Alaska.
In the past, conservation groups have been critical of the rate Sea Alaska has clear-cut its forest. Buck Lindekugel is a grassroots attorney for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. And he says that old model of logging doesn't make sense for the region's economy today. He welcomes the corporation's new venture.
We're excited that Sea Alaska is seizing this opportunity to explore those options. And we think it's good for their shareholders, and it's certainly good for all of us who care about the forest.
But Malott says Sea Alaska has always cared about sustainability and the bottom line.
The carbon project, is it a shift? It's a recognition of the way we've always thought.
He says the corporation isn't going to stop logging on its remaining land, but it's also planning to allocate more acreage to carbon sequestration down the line. As for what happens to the trees after 110 years, Malott says that's up to a younger generation to decide. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
There are no roads linking most of Southeast Alaska. Residents rely on planes and ferries to get from one community to another. This year's spotty ferry service has caused challenges for many students traveling to the Southeast Alaska Music Festival in Juneau, running from April 12th to the 14th, as well as other regional events. KFSK's Angela Denning reports.
It's a Saturday night in Petersburg, and people are gathered inside the Sons of Norway Hall to listen to live music. It's not a visiting show. It's Petersburg High School's jazz band. Tickets are $25 each. Band members are among 60 students in the high school music program who want to attend the Southeast Alaska Music Festival in Juneau in April. There, students play music, get feedback, and learn new skills through clinics. They usually travel to the event by ferry, but this year there were none to take. So a few mothers, such as Diane Christensen, organized this concert to raise money for plane tickets.
This is a Band-Aid, is what it is.
Christensen has three high schoolers studying music. The ferry ride cost was $80 each, but now an airline ticket is $250 apiece. She says ferries are not only for the students, but for families attending their events.
The dependency on it is just basically you don't get it until you live and realize how important it is.
It allows us more of that normal, you know, school experience with our kids.
That's Jessica Iramia, whose daughter plays the bass and is in state choir. She hopes the concert will help all students make Music Fest.
We would really hate for kids to miss out on going because they can't afford it because of the ferry system.
Budget reductions, along with extreme weather and breakdowns, have cut back ferry sailings.
We do need a motion to add the addendum.
Yes.
Petersburg School Board is gathered in the high school library. The problem with the ferries has been coming up regularly at these monthly meetings. Activities Director Jamie Cabral broke the news in February.
About a week ago, we just did get a phone call about our ferry service not being available for Music Fest this year. So,
Cabral coordinates travel for middle and high school students in 26 different activities throughout the year. He buys thousands of ferry tickets. But it's been different this year. In January, only one ferry traveled northbound and southbound in the region.
This year was probably the biggest challenge just due to cancellations. It happens to every school. Every school was in that boat, and so it's huge.
This year, about 40 Petersburg students were stuck for days in Ketchikan when they traveled for basketball. The ferry broke, and there was no backup. Longtime music teacher Matt Lenhard has prepared 2 hours of music for the band tonight. He says it's important for all of his students to attend Music Fest.
The point of these festivals is not to just to take the people who could afford it. Your music program is strongest when we're all together.
Like other regional events, Music Fest is woven into Petersburg student curriculum. It makes Lenhard wonder about the future.
So are we on the cusp of this era where we don't have a dependable and affordable transportation method that these great events just can't happen because of ferry? It's perplexing.
Cheaper ferry tickets do come at a price. Time. It can take 4 or 5 days to make a trip that a plane can do in one. But as Christensen points out, there's also a social benefit.
That whole ideology that the ferry just kind of created its own culture of sitting and visiting, because there's no cell service at times, there's no internet, so there's talking.
Christensen just hopes that this ferry culture is one that will survive long into the future. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Avery Lill in Dillingham, Renee Gross in Homer, Emily Russell and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Teresa Katsarillis in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Angela Denning in Petersburg. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Raven Alaska. Raven now provides Alaskans with the day-over, a 24-hour stop in any major hub along the way to a destination, including Anchorage, Kotzebue, and Bethel. More information at ravendayover.com.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.